Welcome to Vibe Talk Music. I'm your host, Vibe Queen. In this season, we will get vulnerable with a variety of guests discussing their journey to self-awareness and how we can level up the collective consciousness in the music industry. So let's vibe and talk music. This episode is brought to you by Artist Collective, guiding artists and entrepreneurs through the music industry. Learn more and join for free today at artistcollect.com and get back to the music. All right. Welcome, everybody. This week, I'm super excited to be on Vibe Talk Music with somebody that I'm grateful to call a friend, as well as somebody that I look up to as an artist as well. So welcome, Austin Fillmore. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling very, very well. It's been a good weekend, you know, so just getting ready to start the rest of the week. So yeah, I'm great.
Excellent. So I know you are part of a movement that you started, which is Think Less, Feel More, which I think is a really, really cool catchphrase. Can you give us a little bit of insight as to what started that? Because I think it's a really cool concept.
Think Less, Feel More was something that I started a while back, and Evan was able to help me really hone in onto what that means. And shout out Evan, AC_Evan. He is my manager who owns his own company called Artist Collective. Think Less, Feel More, the mantra is, I'm not asking you to turn your thought process off, but to allow yourself to sit within any emotion that you're in right there to inspire and create positive results. And I feel like a lot of people, they overthink things. And if they were just to use their gut, use their insides to make decisions or to discern information, I feel like things would be, this world would be more positive and people would be more of a light to this world.
Absolutely. Yeah, we had Evan on the show last week. Obviously, we co-hosted season one together. So he's your manager. And I agree, and that's something that I've been leading with, is that instead of just leading with your brain and just leading with your heart, to use your gut as well. So I love that that's part of your whole mantra, which I think is really cool.
Sure.
So something that really impressed me, and I want to talk about an array of things on this episode, but your catalog. You have so much music and just so much content. How long have you been in the business? And can you share with us a little bit of your journey and what brought you to where you are today?
Well, I've been doing it professionally for 11 years now, actually. I was going to say 9, but I had to think about it. It's 11 years now. I started, I grew up in a church. My dad's a pastor, and my mom played the piano. And she sang as well too. So growing up in our house, on my mom's requirements, it was to play an instrument, and then on my dad's requirements, it was to play a sport. So I played basketball, soccer, and football growing up. Played a little basketball in college, and then I played saxophone, clarinet, piano growing up. But I stopped playing instruments around the sixth grade to focus more on sports. Within that process, going to school and everything, freestyling became like the thing to do. So at the lunch tables, I remember in seventh grade, we would bang on the tables, make little beats and freestyle. And I wasn't that good at it back then, but I was really good at making the beats. So they didn't let me freestyle, which would frustrate me. But so what I would do is I would go home and I would write these raps and go to school the next day and call them freestyles. And then I would spit a rap and they'd be like, oh, that's dope. They'd be like, you'll spit another one, but I wouldn't have anything else to say. So I'd be like, ah, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, right.
So I got caught. I was faking it. But then time progressed and high school came and I started getting to like these little freestyle group battles. And there's this one guy who was always the superior rapper. His name was Chris Red. I don't know if you know who he is now, but he's on Saturday Night Live.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's wild to see him on that. So time progressed, and I went to college, and I remember going to these house parties, and I remember, back in those days, there was always a rap circle going on. By the time everyone got high and drunk, somebody's gonna start rapping, and
the cipher,
right? And it would, if you were really good, you would get a lot of attention, especially from the ladies. So I made it a point to find myself within those ciphers. And I was actually really good at it. And then what I realized was what made the crowd go ooh and ah was mm-hmm. if you were talking about something that they could physically see. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, what I made it a point was I never had like the longest bars, but I would be able to find something in the room if I'm just freestyling just for the room, or if I'm freestyling against someone, finding something they're wearing, using that to my advantage to just to make the crowd go ooh and ah. And this person could be spitting the hottest bars, woo, 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 woo. But I say some like four lines that make them look stupid and people go, oh,
right.
And I see them, people thought I won. I remember I had a freestyle session. I was at a house party and I was rapping against some guy. Well, I came to the house party with one of my producers and his buddy was like, yo, there's this guy here who's gonna be like this famous rapper. He's in rock right now, but he's gonna be a famous rapper. You should freestyle him. And I freestyled him and I kicked his ass. And he's famous now. His name's Modson.
Wow.
I don't know if you know ever heard of him, but he's out in LA. He has a song with like MGK and he was on Rolling Stones magazine and all that stuff. So then after college or around college time, I got kind of wrapped up into drugs and stuff like that. And I was selling cocaine to be exact and got arrested for it. So I went to jail. And while I was in jail, I was rapping for the inmates and they're like, man, you're pretty good. Like, when you get out, you should probably try to do it. So I was like, oh, maybe. So I got out and I remember my mom picked me up. And the first thing we did, we went to Subway. I wanted some real food, ate some food. And I remember she said to me, she was like, so you ready? And I was like, ready for what? She was like, well, you got to get a real job now. I was like, oh man, I don't really want to do all that. But so I wound up getting a real job and then trying to start back school again. But the one thing I did start doing is trying to pursue music. And I didn't have any resources. So my dad, who's a pastor, he would always record his sermons at church or whatever, but he had a laptop and he had a little microphone. So I took the little microphone, taped it to my bedroom wall, stole one of my mom's pantyhose, cut it up, put it over the microphone as a pop filter, and then would also use the mic. I had a little piano in my room to make these little beats, and then I would record over them. And they started off as like funny little songs. And then one of my buddies was like, yo, my cousin's friend has like a little basement studio if you want to try to record with him. And so I went over there, started recording songs. And then people from my church found out I was doing it. And then one thing led to another. Next thing you know, I'm in studios. I'm recording songs. And next thing you know, years later, I'm dropping my, I actually dropped the project. Back then, Dat Piff was hot. I don't know if you remember Dat Piff. But no, I dropped the project on that called My World. I took it down because I didn't think it was good enough. And then I just spent years of just recording. And then finally I dropped my first project in 2014, titled English. And that just opened up people's eyes to me. And then from that point on, I just knew I was just going to do it. But my first real experience with this music industry came before I dropped my project. My cousins who lived in Des Moines, Iowa, they moved to Chicago and they were doing music stuff. And so they decided to put together a little show. And the first show was at in Wrigleyville. It was at this place called Risque Cafe. It was they put together two shows. So Friday night was at Risque, Saturday night was at Jerry's. I don't know if you remember Jerry's in Wicker Park. And this was before Jerry's had a stage or whatever. So I was like, all right, they're like, you want to perform? I was like, bet. So I just found these three random beats and made these songs. And for that whole entire week, just kept practicing these three songs. So Friday came and went to the show. And it's this place called Risque Cafe. It was kind of like a porn and chicken spot. So they would play like 1970s porn on the TVs. So I remember sitting there and I'm looking at the TV and I'm seeing some girl shoving golf balls down a guy's throat. And I'm like, this is where I'm having my first show. Okay, wow. Okay, bet. So
start somewhere.
You start somewhere. So I went up there and I did my thing. And I was like, oh, like I felt it. And the crowd loved it. Next night did the same thing, and I was rapping as servers were serving food in front of me. Mm-hmm. But the energy behind it, being in front of people and being on stage and having a microphone in my hand, just and entertaining people's hearts, minds, and souls was just something that really caught to me and stuck with me. So from that point on, I knew I was gonna do it, and here I am years later. Done did a bunch, yeah.
That's incredible. Wow, what a story. So I want to touch on the time you spent when you were in jail. Do you feel that that was a huge, impactful time? How long were you also in jail? Just
curious. I was in there for like 7 months. So there's jail and then there's prison. Mm-hmm. And so I was in jail. I never had to go to prison. Because the whole situation that happened, I was able to get probation. So I was able to skip out in jail. But that time was a crazy time. And what it taught me then at that moment, what it taught me was to never go back. You know what I'm saying? And I remember when you first get to jail, it's this experience, like the only thing in your mind is I gotta get out. Mm-hmm. And you know, unless you're thinking of sneaking out, which is damn near impossible. You know, then there comes a realization when you realize, okay, I might be here for a while. And you know, my parents are like, yo, we can either bond you out or we can get you a lawyer, but we can't do both. So I was like, man, which I said in my last project in the song Real Out Here, I was like, man, to tell the lawyers, I'll sit down. That's probably what's best for me right now. And it's scary because the scariest part about jail is you get used to it, you know, and I think as humans, we are equipped with the ability, some humans, a lot of humans are equipped with the ability to adapt. Mm-hmm. And in that situation, I learned how well for me, I can adapt, and how well I can turn a negative into a positive. And so mm-hmm. next thing you know, I started having fun in jail, you know what I'm saying? When you think about it, you got, you know.
You make the best of it.
You make the best of it. When you think about it, you get 3 meals a day, you get to watch TV, you get to work out, you get to play basketball, and you're hanging with the homies. You know what I'm saying? And as long as you don't do this, do that, there's some rules to it. When you're in there that I had to learn, you know, I got into a couple fights, you know, then you'll be straight. I'm sure prison is even higher than that.
Right, of
but,
course.
But what it taught me was it taught me my ability to adapt and my ability to entertain and how people were just drawn to me. Like inmates just always wanted to talk to me. And I was like talking to people. And for some reason, people when I would say something, it was like, it's like they knew, they didn't question it. Like, oh, he probably knows what he's talking about. So I figured out I had some type of influence. So then later on, what it taught me was the aspect of pain and how our bodies and our mind, when we're going through pain, it's the worst thing in the world. And then when we get out of that pain, it's like a relief. And then as years go on, you kind of forget about that pain. You know, like, you know, my daughter's mom, she had a baby, or we had a baby. And I remember right when she just got done pushing our daughter out, I whispered in her ear, I was like, so you want to have another baby? She goes, no, never. And I was like, word. And then like, you know, 6 months later, she's like, I think I want to have another baby. And it's like, don't you remember right. the pain that you would think? Right. She's like, not really. So, and that's when, and I related that to being in jail. It's like, I remember it happening. I just don't remember the feeling that I went through. But one moment that'll never leave my mind. I remember I was sleeping. It was bedtime. You go to sleep in jail, and I slept. And it was one of those nights where you get into that deep sleep. So, where you drooling on your hand, you know what I'm saying? It's super deep. And I remember my dream. I was dreaming that I was sleeping in my bed at my parents' house, and I was all comfortable and everything. And then I remember waking up, like thinking, oh, I'm at my parents' house. And I woke up and I look open my eyes, and I'm in a jail cell. And I was like, oh crap, I'm still in here. So that's something that I'll never forget. And that experience was like, yo, you can never go back to that, because when you're in there, man, the only thing you have to do is just time in your mind. And you just got to find ways to keep your mind active. I spent a week in the hole in solitary confinement one time for a fight.
Wow.
Yeah, man, it was wild. And literally solitary confinement is 10 times smaller than a studio apartment. All you have is a sink, a toilet, and your bed, which is like, you know, the mattress is like this thin. And, you know, your first, I was in there for a week, which felt like 8 years. But the first like 12 hours, you thinking, all right, I'm just going to sleep. I'm going to sleep and get through this. We sleep. Like, oh, hey, we must be like the next day. It's only 3 hours later. And so the next thing you know, your body can't sleep anymore. So you start doing push-ups. You start doing things to keep your mind active. And I remember that experience was really tough. And then you get happy. Once you get out of solitary confinement, you get happy to get back to the regular pod. You're like, yeah, I'm free, but you're still in jail. So it's a wild experience. But yeah, I definitely learned how to stay out of jail and learn that I for me personally, that's not something that I want to continue to do.
Wow. That is incredible. Solitary confinement. Like, I can't even imagine just being alone with your thoughts for that long. Were you able to quiet your thoughts when you were in solitary confinement, or what did you do to kind of keep your mind from going crazy, in essence?
Some people call it meditation. I call it prayer. And you just quieting your thoughts is just me personally, I don't think I could ever quiet my thoughts. I just think I need to direct my thoughts onto things that will bring me peace. And doing that was praying to God, making plans in my head, making mental plans of what I'm going to do when I get out, and thinking about the type of person that I want to be when I get out, and all the things that you want to accomplish, and just constant prayer and reading a lot. I remember I fell in love with reading Nora Roberts' books, the romantic books that she would write. But the one book that I remember, the one book that really stuck with me, I actually read The Five Love Languages while I was in jail. Wow. Which opened my mind to how people love, how I love, and just I learned how to really move socially with people in relationships, relationships as in like, platonic and then actual, romantic relationships. So yeah, man, it's a lot of reading.
Excellent. Yeah, reading is probably one of my favorite pastimes. I used to read so much as a kid. I still read a lot. And I know you mentioned one of your favorite books is How to Win and Influence People, which is one of
How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah, it's a fantastic book. So I love that. Another question I have for you is, I know you mentioned that your dad is a pastor. So I'm curious, do you feel that growing up with that, did that have a very heavy influence on you? Because you mentioned that people tend to be drawn to you and feel that whatever you say, it must be true. So I'm curious if that had an influence with your dad being a pastor and being a man that's spreading this gospel. Do you think that that kind of transferred to you?
Oh, of course. And, with him being a pastor, the natural underlining core of that is being an entertainer, and entertaining in a subject that you know. And so my dad, who's if you ever met my dad, he's a very lively guy. He's the type of guy, and instead of just saying something, he'll say it with a lot of emotion and extra stuff behind it to get you to really feel it. And I never understood it as a kid. And he's a very talkative person. Like we would go to Walmart, a trip to Walmart that's supposed to take 20 minutes end up being an hour because he ends up talking to every single person that even smiles at him. And it used to frustrate the crap out of me, the hell out of me, because I'm like, man, we just want to go. But what I didn't realize was I'd be watching and I was subconsciously learning how to interact with people and how to find some type of common ground with people. So his showmanship, his ability to stand in front of people and have confidence and speak was something that really played a heavy role in my life. And I didn't start to realize it till I was in college. And I remember I was in speech class and we had to talk about something that we liked. And I waited till the day of to figure out something to talk about. So, and I remember all these kids are going up with notes and stuff to talk. And I just walked up there with a speaker, set the speaker down, press play, and sat there for like 2 minutes. Y'all hear this? This is music. This is what I want to do. Start talking about it. And my teacher asked me, she goes, "You didn't prepare for that at all, did you?" I was like, "Honestly, no." She goes, "I'm giving you an A because you up there talking was amazing." I was like, "Word." So that's, you know, and I got that from him. And then when it comes to the aspect of religion and Christianity, that was something that I always was trying to rebel against, something that I didn't want to be true because, you know, when you grow up, it's one thing, you know, it's one thing when you have parents that aren't parents of the cloth and you're just going to church, you know, whether you're going to Catholic mass or church service. When you go home, you're able to separate that. Okay, we went to church, now we're back in a regular life. For me, I couldn't. You know, I went to church with the pastor, came home with the pastor. He preaches to me at church, he preaches to me at home.
Right.
So I was like, there's no separation. So it was kind of like how you put your socks on in the morning. I took that for granted the same way. So, and it was something that as a kid, you know, you just, oh, that's just what mom and dad talk about. That's what mom and dad talk about. And then I got older and I started doing my own research onto different religions and stuff. And I tried different things and none of it really sat right with me. And then I went back to the Bible and all these things just felt natural, felt right. And then there's a lot of experiences, even outside of jail, that I had that just always led me back to God. And, you know, I just gave it up. I was like, you know what? I guess this is real. And I'm not perfect. I'm not the best Christian or whatever you want to call it. But the one thing I believe in is having a relationship with Christ. And that relationship is something that where I really get to know him, where I can talk to him like I'm talking to you. So my dad being a pastor was a big influence in my life, career-wise, spiritually-wise, and everything else-wise.
That's beautiful. Could you share when you kind of had that awakening, when you went from like, I'm going to rebel against God, religion, to, wow, this is something I want to absorb into my life. And I'm sure when your dad found this out, he must have been so excited. So can you share with us like what that was like for you when you had that awakening?
I wouldn't say it was just one awakening. I would say it's a multiple awakenings. And I remember, you know, I used to get into a lot of issues and arguments with my parents. And one of the things in the Bible, it says, children, obey your parents so that it may be well with you on this earth, you know, and life wasn't going good. You know what I'm saying? It was going good in certain areas and bad in certain areas, like this up and down roller coaster. And I remember one day I was like, you know what, I'm just stop fighting my parents and just let them be who they be and let them be who they are. And I remember, you know, life started getting slowly getting better and better and better. So I was like, oh, okay, that actually worked. This one time, so I've almost died three times. First time I was 2 years old, my parents and I were living in an apartment and we had a fire. And then they came in, saved my parents, forgot that I wasn't laying in the bed with them, went back in, saved me. And 2 minutes later, the whole apartment complex collapsed. So that was my first near death experience. But I'm 2-3 years old, so I don't really know. Second one, which, you know, God had to bring it back to my memory. I was in first grade and I remember we went to a water park for a field trip and I didn't know how to swim. And everyone's all, you know, go down the water slide. At the end of the water slide is actually a deep pool. And I'm like, remember, I'm gonna go down it. Mr. No Fear, I'm just gonna do it. And I slid, I was going down, and as I'm getting to the end, I realized, oh, there's a lot of water at the end of this thing. So I stood up on the water slide to try to stop myself, but there's so much water going underneath you that I slipped and I fell into the water and I literally started drowning. Just, and I couldn't swim, so I didn't know what to do. Yeah. Next thing you know, I just remember like everything going black. A lifeguard came, pulled me out, started doing a little CPR thing on me, and that's when I woke up and water came out of my mouth. and I wasn't allowed to go back in any of the pools for the rest of the day. But that was my second near-death experience.
I'm sorry. And, to
no, you're fine. That's when I realized that I am A-OK with being the guy who sits on the side handing out towels. You know, here you go. You have a great day. So I'll get in the water a little bit now, but it depends. The third one came actually when I was in my 20s. I remember I was like, I was like 26 or something. And we were, it was crazy because I was with one of my good friends, who I'm still friends with today, and a producer. And we were just looking for something to do. We were looking for a party, something to get into. Mm-hmm. We found out about this party, this house party. So we're like, oh, let's slide up in there. Next thing you know, we're hearing that all the party got shot up and shut down. Cops came, but we're like, oh, maybe that's bullshit. So we drove by the street, but we see all these cop cars down the street. We're like, all right. And that was like our first inclination that maybe we should go home. But we were like, nah, we're gonna go out. We're gonna try to find something else. And I remember, which I'm so lucky, we would usually, no cap, no bull, we would be drinking and driving, like drinking while we headed to where we at. For some reason that day, we didn't get no liquor. We were just like, oh, we'll just drink when we get to the party. Mm-hmm. And I remember we driving down Ashland, about to cross over Milwaukee or whatever, and we're driving. Next thing you know, I'm sitting, my homie's driving, I'm in the front seat, passenger side, and all the homies in the back seat. And I remember just hearing this big, like, boom. And I just remember, we were just like, whoa, whatever. And I'm like, oh. And the car stopped. Next thing I look, the airbags all out. I'm looking around. Oh, crap, we got hit. And I look out the window, and there's oncoming traffic coming back to hit us. So I hurried and get out the car, unhurt, unscratched, not a scratch on me. And my homies all get out, not a scratch. Next you know, we get out the car, and some other cars come. Luckily, they didn't hit us. But a drunk driver was turning as we were going straight and turned too far and hit the passenger wheel going like 50 miles an hour, totaled the car.
Wow.
And if he would have been, you know, a few more inches closer to that passenger door where I was sitting, who knows if I would have been here. And right. The car was totaled. And I just remember thinking like, dang, someone's really looking out for my life. You know what I'm saying? So I attribute that to God. And right after that, that's once I made the decision, I was like, oh man, that's God right there. From now on, anything I do, I'm going to be thanking him and giving it up to him. Once that happened, then all this other stuff happening. Like, I'm performing at Subterranean. I'm performing at House of Blues. I'm performing at, and all this stuff just started, good things started happening. Started attracting
these blessings.
Started attracting these blessings. But I would say the biggest eye-opening experience for me when I realized that, you know, God, Jesus is real for my life. My son's mom, we had just got into an argument, and this is before she had him. We got into an argument, and she's like, oh, I'm not sleeping in the bed with you. I was like, all right, whatever. So she blew up the mattress and slept on the mattress, and I slept in the bed. And I remember I was laying on my left side, and she's laying on her left side on the mattress so I could see her back. And I went to sleep. And then, you know, those moments where sleep paralysis, they call it, happens, yeah. And you can like open your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason,
it's
scary. And that had always happened to me since I was like, first time it happened, I was like 17. And I was scared, but I've always felt like this dark presence,
mm-hmm.
this dark mm-hmm. presence come over me. And I remember I talked to my dad about it, and he was like, well, whenever that happens, just start saying Jesus' name. So I would just start saying Jesus, 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 or try to mouth it. Next thing you know, the presence went away and I can move and I'm up. And so this was right around the time I released my first project and stuff. So I'm really into the music stuff. And I always heard about, you know, if you sell your soul, you can get rich and famous faster. And I remember I'm laying there and my eyes open. I feel the dark presence, but and I've always been the type of I've always been the type of person where, like, you know, I never want to succumb to fear. So I toughened up and I said, I didn't say Jesus this time. I said, "Who are you?" Instantly, the devil flashed before my eyes. I'm laying like this, right? Yeah, man, I'm laying like this. Devil flashed before my eyes, and he sat right here. And in the Bible, people get it misconstrued a lot. The devil doesn't want to be better than God. He wants to be like God. He wants to be respected and loved and just like God is. So everything he does to mimic God. And in the Bible, it says that, you know, God is whoever you, when it comes to visually, whatever makes you feel comfortable to believe what God is, that's what God is when it comes to visually. And so the devil was who I thought the devil always looked like, and he looked like Darth Maul from Star Wars. So I remember seeing that, and he sat right here, and when I said, "Who are you?" he goes, "You know who I am." And my next question was to ask him, how do I get rich and famous and blow up in this music world? Before I could even ask him the question or fix my lips to ask that question, he answered it. He said, "Deny him in your heart."
Mm-hmm.
Which is huge.
Right.
And
absolutely.
I got scared. I was like,
absolutely.
I started saying, "Jesus, Jesus, 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 Jesus." And we went away. I could start moving. And then my son's mom was like, "Why are you yelling? Why are you yelling?" So I told her the situation, and then she went back to sleep. And I remember I started crying, which I'm not a crier. But I was crying. I'm looking out my window, and I was just praying. And I was like, "Yo, God, I just was able to hear the devil's voice loud and clear. Why can't I hear yours? Like, why was it so easy for me to hear the devil's voice, but I feel like it's so hard to hear yours?" And this is the first time I really heard God's voice. The only difference was I wasn't open to listening to it. And what he said to me was, "I don't have to overtake your body in order for you to hear me. I talk to you every day. That voice in your head that you think is you talking to you, that's actually me talking to you, telling you not to do this, not to do that. You just got to listen." And that was an eye-opening experience to me. So that think less, feel more, to tie it all back together, is that gut feeling, that feeling that tells you maybe I shouldn't do this, or maybe this feels right, or whatever. That is God talking to me and speaking to me, trying to lead me down the right path. I just have to be open to hearing it.
Wow. I'm kind of speechless right now. That is an incredible story. Like, I'm so grateful that you shared that, because I think more people need to hear that. Because what I want to ask you is, what would you say to artists that may not have had such a profound experience like you had, that's so literal, where you could say, "The devil showed up for me"? You know what I mean? Because I don't want artists to necessarily have to conjure that. So what advice would you give to artists that may be kind of struggling with this feeling of, you know, how can I have that epiphany moment? You know what I mean? Because I want to get into that, you know, the out of shadows, the fall of cabal. Because I feel this is very real, because I kind of was a little bit skeptical and kind of like, I don't know if this is real. And you know my background and the things I've kind of seen, but I was a little bit naive and turned a blind eye to it. But what you're sharing with me and the things that I've seen, I'm like, okay, this is very real. So for those that are listening that are a bit skeptical, what advice would you give if they haven't had such a tangible experience like you?
Well, I think the reason why I had a tangible experience, because I felt like God knew that if I didn't have these tangible experiences, I probably wouldn't believe. And if you're in that same position, your experience is coming. You just got to be open to hearing it. Continue to make your music, continue to do what you need to do, but just know that there will be a moment in time, and that tangible experience may not be the exact same tangible experience that I have, but you will come to a fork in the road where you have to make a decision. And that decision is where the think, let's feel more comes in, and you'll have to listen to your gut. But you have to be open to your surroundings and to the spirit world talking to you. What was the second part of the question again?
No, that you pretty much answered it. Yeah. That you're going to have to make a decision. I really wanted you to say that, because that's pretty much, I agree with that, is that you're going to have to eventually get to a point where you're going to have to make a choice. And so I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head with that. So let's talk about that.
I'm actually going to say this one thing too, which just popped in my mind. Don't mean to interrupt you. Sorry for interrupting. But the devil hides in plain sight. And that's what I've been noticing, especially which we're about to get into talking about, which what's going on. All these things that are happening right in front of people's eyes, and they have no idea. And it's like, the best way to hide is to hide in plain sight. And so when you're going through life and you're seeing things that feel uneasy or don't sit well, that is the evil exposing themselves to you, but in such a slick, sly way that it's hard for you to recognize it and pinpoint it. So just always be open to that.
Absolutely. And so what I wanted to get into is the documentary that just completely changed my life and definitely elevated my spiritual awakening. And I know it's what brought you and I closer and what humbled me to just, I'll be frank, just kind of like step out of my own ego, because, you know, the truth is you and I definitely butted heads in the beginning of our relationship and our friendship. And, sure. You know, I definitely believe God, the universe, whatever you want to name it, places people in your life for a reason. And I believe you were placed in my life for a reason. And you acted as a trigger for me so often. And I'm just like, how does this person know how to get underneath my skin exactly in a way where it would just get me from 0 to 100? And I didn't understand why. And it's so interesting how, and I was just talking to my boyfriend about this. And yes. And I was telling him how I was like, you know, the last time, you know, you triggered me, I was able to process it and work through it. And I was like, wow, this is literally like, I can measure how much I've grown, because it didn't bother me and I was able to work through it. And so, I don't know, this just kind of impromptu is happening. I want to thank you for just being yourself and just not filtering yourself and just being so candid, because it's helped me grow so much. So thank you.
I'll be honest with you, I don't even realize that I would trigger you until you would say something later.
I know. And it's kind of interesting. So I appreciate that. But to kind of dive into what I really want to talk about and what really elevated my consciousness, and I know a lot of people out there with the pandemic, is the documentary Out of Shadows and Fall of Cabal. So I know you've seen both. What was your reaction when you saw it? Because I know you had this experience, which I didn't know you had this experience, and you obviously had it before you saw those documentaries. Was it like surprising to you when you saw all of this and you saw the corruption that was going on in Hollywood? Or were you kind of like, oh yeah, I knew this was happening? Or like, what was your reaction? I'm curious.
It was the eye-opening part was how in depth they were going. I think that was eye-opening. I always knew it was there. I knew it was something that I would quote unquote have to deal with in the future, but I didn't know how in depth and how deep and how evil and how disgusting and disturbing it is. You know, the part that shook me was the aspect of involving little children. You know what I mean? That's the part that I was like, whoa, what? And shout out Evan for showing me that. So it just reconfirmed everything that I already knew, but also told me that what I knew wasn't even the surface of what's going on. So to this day, like I watched Out of Shadows yesterday. I was showing my family that, my parents did. And
wow.
Yeah. I for some reason, that Out of Shadows video, I like to watch it at least once or twice a month just to keep abreast, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And just to make sure that when I do need to show someone that I'm searching the right stuff, because it's not an easy thing to find. It's there. You just got to remember certain pictures, because they don't make it easy to find on YouTube. They don't want you to see it.
You can go to outofshadows.org.
Oh, there's a website?
Yep. Outofshadows.org. There you go.
All right, boom. I will just go to YouTube.
Yeah, outofshadows.org. So you can always just go there, and it's just always there. So
word.
Yeah,
word.
It's been hard to find on YouTube. It keeps getting taken down. Yeah. What did your parents think?
So it's funny you say that. So my mom and my two brothers, they're on the exact same wavelength as we are. And it's funny, my dad, and it's usually surrounded around the topic of politics, which, you know, is a very touchy subject for a lot of people. And growing up, my family, we were Republicans. Excuse me. My dad always voted Republican. My mom always voted Republican, but they only voted off of, from as a kid, what I thought, they only voted off of two issues, abortion and the gay marriage stuff.
Gotcha.
And, you know, as a kid, as I was getting older, I was like, man, there's so many other aspects to politics. Why are you only focusing on that? And I didn't realize how powerful those aspects are. But my mom, later on, I learned that my mom was looking at policies. But when Obama came along, Obama fooled a lot of people.
Race.
100%. Even yeah. And yesterday, as I was hanging with my parents this weekend, my mom never, before Obama, my mom would never. We knew, but she would never express what she voted for, because she's always be like, this is a private matter and I'm going to keep it to myself. And I remember when Obama got elected, we're watching TV and I'm all excited. I'm like, what? We got a black president?
Same. I was excited too. I voted for Obama.
Mm-hmm. I voted for him too. And that was the only time I was able to vote. Because right after that, all the jail stuff happened. So as a felon, I can't vote. But yeah,
I believe you can. I was reading that there's a way around it and that you can. So I'm going to send that to you, because there may be a way around it. So we'll talk about that offline.
Please do. And I remember sitting there and I remember looking at my mom and she was just staring at the TV. And I'm like, Mom, are you not happy? She goes, yeah, this is interesting. And I just felt in my spirit, I'm like, something's not right with how she's reacting. And years went by later on, and next thing you know, she's against Obama. And from, I always assumed that from the jump, she was against Obama. And this weekend, she finally admitted, she goes, you know what? Obama's first term, I fell for the race thing, and I voted for him. And when I was sitting in front of the TV, she goes, something was not feeling right inside of me. And she is like, the Lord had to check her on that. And so after Obama's second term, she didn't vote for him. And then when Trump was running against Hillary, she voted for Trump. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was always against Trump. Like, what? Trump? We got to go Hillary, or at least Bernie. I was the guy. I don't really like Hillary. So I'm like, Bernie seems like a cool dude. And in all honesty, I didn't know jack diddly squat about any politics. I'm just going based off my emotions. So to bring it back in, my dad is 100% strictly against Trump.
Against really? Trump. Why?
Hates him.
That's so surprising.
Because, and I'm gonna bring it back to Out of Shadows, television, TV programming, right? He sits there and watches CNN. Just like his dad, which my grandpa would sit there and watch CNN, and my grandpa will fight you tooth and nail to defend the Democrats. But my dad has a habit of falling asleep in front of the TV, which is the worst thing.
Because
when you fall asleep and the TV's playing, all that information is just getting into your head. And so my two brothers were recently living with my parents and my mom, and so they would get to all these arguments, and I don't live with them, and I talk to them here and there and stuff. So, you know, I never actually had a conversation with my dad about this stuff, but you know, I had a feeling that I knew my mom was up like on the right side with what I've been learning lately. But this weekend, we had a conversation. I realized everything that me and you from the Out of Shadows documentary, my mom's seen it, my brothers have seen it before I even showed them. So they already knew all this stuff was going on in the pedophilia with Biden. And so I took it upon myself to bring it up to my dad, and we're at dinner, and I'm talking about it, and he's trying to defend it. He goes, but Trump. And I said, Dad, Joe Biden's a pedophile. Haven't you seen the videos? He goes, yeah, I see the videos. I see the videos, but Trump. And I said, Dad, first off, I'm gonna say this. You know, I don't talk to Mom and Josh and Jeremiah about politics. So, you know, we talk here and there, but not about politics. But isn't it interesting? Your most rebellious son, who was always against Christianity, who was against whatever, is saying the exact same thing that they're saying with no type of conversation. Dad, I went down that rabbit hole. I did my research. Mm-hmm. And I said, look at me. Your most rebellious son, who don't want God and stuff to be true, is saying to you. And he got quiet. And then when he tried to defend it, he tried to say something against it. I said, Dad, what you just said has nothing to do with what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And he got quiet. And I said to him, I was like, it's the ego. And I told him, so what you're having right now is cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
All that, right? And he sat there, and I said to him, I was like, Dad, what you need to do is not look at who you're voting for when it comes to Biden and Trump, but you're voting for the powers that back them and the evil that backs the Democratic Party. You know, I don't like Trump. And Trump is, he's not a perfect person, but let's be honest, none of those politicians are. He goes, well, Trump lies. Name me a politician who has it. You know what I'm saying? He's being a politician. So when you're voting for Trump, don't think of it as you're voting for Trump. You're voting for a set of people who do not like the evilness that is going on under the Democratic side. So you need to take the Biden, take the Trump out of it, and really look at the powers that are influencing these two parties. At the end of the day, both parties are, you know, they at some point they have to work together. So both of them are evil. So, you know, I wish we had another option, but this is the best option that we got. And he goes, well, I'll vote Republican just not for Trump. And I said, why?
Mainstream media, they did such a fantastic job.
And for real. And I said to him, I was like, Dad, you will not give me one reason.
They can't.
Politically wise, why you don't like Trump.
They can't.
You'll give me emotional reasons why you like him. But you also won't give me one reason politically why you like Biden.
It's ego. It's ego. And the reason why I can say that is because I was guilty of it, but I was able to humble myself and admit it. And until you're able to humble yourself and admit that you were wrong, you won't be able to. And it takes a person humble enough to admit they were wrong and say, look, I was wrong, in order to grow. And because I was willing to grow, because I hit rock bottom in my life, that is why I was able to do that. And other people that are not able to do that, they're not going to do that. And it's almost like I want to tell people, hey, I'm not going to judge you if you all of a sudden say, I understand and I want to vote for Trump. I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to say I told you so. I'm not going to ridicule you. I'm not going to rub it in your face. I'm going to welcome you with open arms and say, hey, it's all good. Because this is not about me pointing fingers or making you feel like crap. It's about me fighting the evil forces that are out there and winning a battle, a spiritual war. That's what it's about. It's not me trying to win anything. So if people could understand that that's what really the movement is about, they would understand it's about love. And that's the truth. And the reason I can say that is because I just want to quickly share my background is that my dad is a hardcore Republican, but my dad is a very educated man when it comes to politics. And he follows CNN, Fox, all of the news channels, but he actually does his research and he looks at the policies. So when he voted for Trump, he was actually able to tell me why he voted for Trump. And he was actually able to tell me the policies and the things that Trump has been able to enact and the things that he was able to do for our country that gave us positive change. And so my dad doesn't do things out of emotion. He does things out of facts. And so when I talk to my dad and I tell him about all of the evil stuff and the pedophilia, he was just like, oh, wow, that's interesting. He didn't even know that. He wasn't voting for Trump because of that. He was voting for Trump because of all of the great things he has already done. So to me, that only helps the argument. And so back in the day when I voted for Obama and I told my dad, you know, this is progress. We have a black man that's running. My dad, who is also black, he said, so what? The color of his skin should not matter. What matters is he going to be a good president? If we start, this is what my dad told me, if we start voting people into office based on their race and based off of the color of our, of his skin, that's not progress. That's a diversion. That's a diversion. And I was very ignorant back then and very naive in my thinking. And this is me in my late 20s. I dismissed my dad. I was like, no, the fact that he's black is good enough. This gives girls and boys that are growing up hope that, you know, they too can be a president one day. And he was saying, no, it does not. It's the character that should determine if you can be in office. And I was like, oh, that's just Trump, you know, bashing, saying he wasn't born here. But it was already starting to like get into my head that Trump was not a good person. And so I just did not believe. And I voted for Obama. You know what I mean? And I wasn't doing any research. And then when it came to 2016 with Hillary and the WikiLeaks, I did not do any due diligence. I didn't do any research. Now, when it came to Hillary Clinton, I had a bad feeling in my stomach, which is why I didn't vote for her. I was starting to awaken. And so I voted for Jill Stein. That's who I voted for. But I didn't vote for Trump. Could I give a reason why? No. I just believed the mainstream media and people said, don't vote for him. And so I just believed that narrative. And so when my dad said he voted for Trump, I remember feeling embarrassed. Like, oh my God, my dad's a Trump supporter. I can't believe it. My dad's black and he's voting for this racist. And now, fast forward to 2020, it's like, I can't believe all of the stuff that I found out and I took the time to research and I had the time. Now I talk to my dad and he's just like, well, I'm glad you woke up. And he's like, just be careful. You know, if you tell people who you are in support of, you may lose friendships. You may lose people wanting to work with you because people are so obsessed with hating this man. They will literally say anything to get him out. They don't even care who takes his place. They don't care if it's a pedophile. They don't care who it is. And now they're saying because Kamala Harris is black, even though she was Indian before, and now she's black enough, that's good enough. Anything she's to get terrible. Out. It's crazy. It makes no sense. And so the more I go down the rabbit hole and some people are saying, oh, because Trump hates gays, because Trump, and I will present arguments that, no, look what he has done for this. Look what he, doesn't matter. They're just, it's like, it's blinding, you know? So it's crazy. So what I've come to the conclusion of is that what I've found with the leftist and just being a conservative, I guess, I don't really like labels, but I guess that's my viewpoint, is that unless people are open to actually hearing a side of the story or they're open to having their minds changed, people are just kind of set in what they believe. And that's so really the true. Way, exactly. And so the way I look at it is that I had a very open mind. I was never a hardcore Republican. I was never a, you know, person that had a set point of view. So I think I'm a good example of a person that had an open enough mind that if you present the facts to me and if you present your argument, I'm open enough that I'll have my mind change. And I feel like if people can live their life in that way, there can be a lot of progress in that sense. And so I do have a lot of empathy and I can understand why people will look at the race and look at it as progress, but we have to take a step back and look at it as, okay, what does their character say? You know what I mean? And so that's kind of where we're at now. So I'm gonna ask you this, I'm curious. You don't have to answer if you don't want to, but what are your political views at this point now that you've done the research and you know, you've kind of gone down that rabbit hole? If you could vote, what would you do?
I vote for Trump. I mean, plain and simple, and I'm not voting for Trump.
You froze. I couldn't hear you. You froze.
Okay. I would vote for Trump if I'm being honest.
And why would you?
Just based off all the information I've seen, and we've gone down that rabbit hole. For me, it's obviously policy driven, and Trump has actually done more for the Black community in his 4 years than Obama did for the Black community in his 8 years. But for me, it's bigger than just policies. I'm voting based off of a spiritual aspect. And I just don't want those spiritual forces that are behind the Democrats to win. And, you know, do I wish someone else was the face of the Republican Party? Yeah. But, you know, Trump, I'm not voting for Trump because of who Trump is. I'm voting for Trump because of what the people that represent him represent.
Right.
And, you know, I up until today, I thought that I couldn't vote because I was a felon. So if you have information where I can vote.
I'm gonna see if I can find it. I read that, so don't take my word on that, but I will do some more research and send that because I remember reading that.
And I tried to play the middle ground, you know, on social media where I was like, oh, I don't know who to vote for. But then, like, people just started automatically assuming that I'm on Trump's side. So I was like, you know what? Maybe I am. And it is what it is. I've had people, this one guy messaged me on Instagram. He's like, man, I love your music so much. I love your music so much, but I just can't support you. I have to unfollow you.
It's ridiculous. Like, what? Ridiculous.
Like, for what?
Stupid. It's absolutely like, what? Ridiculous. I'm like why what? Can't They're we? Like, why? Like, why? Because you support Trump, who is taking down human trafficking. You can't listen to my music? I just don't, it makes no rational sense. If anything, I feel that because you are against that and because you just literally shared on my podcast that you had a moment in your life where you could have chosen to sell your soul and you said no to that, I have so much more respect for you. Say what you will, you could have easily said, you know what, F it. Yeah, I'm going to sell my soul. I could do that, you know? I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole right now, but there's so many celebrities that I do believe they are where they are because they did exactly that. You chose to not do that. So for that alone, I respect you so much. For that alone, I want to support your music. So to me, it's just crazy to me. But people are going to make the choices they make, and that's okay. And so I applaud you for taking a stand and making that choice. And so I've lost a lot of friendships and connections, but I look at it this way. You know, if people are willing to lose or walk away, then they were never really a friend to begin with. It was never strong enough to withstand that anyway. And so therefore, to me, I look at it as good riddance. And I think a lot of people are weeding themselves out right now, and that's okay. And so if I only have a handful of people that I can call my true friend, I'm all right with that. It's quality over quantity. So
it's all
good with me. Absolutely. So
exactly.
I want to kind of get back to the music a little bit before we wrap up our conversation and kind of pick your brain and get some advice from you because you've been doing this for so long. And I know our audience is a good mixture of people that admire artists, but also just artists. So what advice would you give for those that are listening that are struggling with confidence and maybe that charisma that you kind of have, I guess, naturally, but what advice would you give to those that are maybe struggling with that?
When it comes to specifically music, I'm a firm believer that whatever you do for a while, doesn't make perfect, but practice makes better. You know, you become better at doing things. Some people naturally become quicker with the practice that they're doing because it's naturally in them. And some people, it takes a little bit more of a certified effort. I'm trying to tread lightly because I don't want to give anyone any false hope because there are some people out there that shouldn't be doing music that are just bad. And it's like, I don't want to say, keep going. Cause then I'll sound like a false hope Democratic person. You just gotta be, it's just, when it comes to it, it's just honesty within yourself. First you gotta figure out the reason why. You gotta figure out why you're doing this. What is influencing you to want this so much? And then break that down to figure out what is it that you actually want. And you may realize that what you actually want, the way you're going about it, could be the wrong way of getting it. you know, there's some people who, like, for example, like, you know, Chris Red, who would freestyle at the lunch cafeteria, you know, he made the switch from rapping to acting. And, you know, he was at, I remember watching him at one point, he kept trying to have his music career, and his music, he was great freestyle, but his music wasn't that great. But then I guess what he realized was entertaining is what he likes to do. He just likes to be entertaining. And at that point in time, freestyling and rapping and making music was his way of entertaining. He just switched his way of entertaining. So I think confidence is gained when you know, if you want to do music, you do music, but you also try other things. Confidence is gained when you don't block or make yourself just go down this one path. Like even me, I'm acting as well now too, which is something that I've always wanted to do. So confidence also comes when you are just when you're sure what you know when you're sure that you know the reason of why you want to do something, and then the confidence comes even more when you start figuring out what's the best way to accomplish that. So for anyone that's struggling with confidence in music, I'd say start trying other things. Don't put music down, start trying other things and see how that makes you feel. And then also see the progression. You know a tree by its fruits. If a tree is producing good fruit, I'm not gonna cut it down. But if the tree is producing bad fruit, I'm gonna cut it down and start over. So if things are not moving as fast as you like them to move musically-wise, try other things that are in the entertainment industry. And then that confidence just comes, you know. It's also for me, I know what helped was you get these thoughts in your mind. We'll call, you know, those thoughts are doubt. That's when that voice creeps up in your head, which is the devil, creeps up in your head and says, "Oh, you suck. Oh, this ain't good enough." You got to start talking to that voice, and you got to start battling that voice. And it's not a battling of the voice of, no, I'm good. You got to, instead of saying, when the voice says you suck, instead of just saying, no, I'm good, you got to have reasons. Okay, why do I think that? Then go back and review everything. Okay, maybe I could have done this better, or maybe I could have done that better. And then I used to stand in front of the mirror every day for 30 days. Anything you do for 30 days becomes a habit. So I stood in front of the mirror and was very, you got this, you are this, was preaching to myself, telling myself what I wanted myself to believe. And so, yeah, I mean, confidence in any area comes over time, but confidence comes with honesty, being honest with yourself and with others. So, you know, just keep being honest.
Absolutely. Yeah. You just described self-reflection, being self-aware, and affirmations.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so I agree. Did you know that? Did you realize that that's what you were describing?
No, yes and no. When you're saying it now, it's like, okay, yeah, that's definitely what it's called. But we got to the same point through different paths.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's why I love asking these questions, because sometimes hearing it from someone else, it will resonate differently. So I think it's important that different people deliver the same message, but in their own wording.
And I'm gonna go back to what you were saying when we're talking about the politics and everything that spiritually is going on, until someone it becomes okay with them, which is the self-reflection, being okay with admitting that they're wrong. Mm-hmm. That's when change can start. And my mom said to me the next day, when me and my mom were just sitting and talking, she goes, Austin, she called me Colin, that's my real name, but she goes, Austin, I've never seen your dad sit there so quiet. When we had these conversations, because it was kept coming from your brothers, we were here every day telling him he gets tired of hearing it, but he sat there and was really quiet, had nothing to say against you. And I said, I know, because I told him, I was like, Dad, I literally said to him, I said, Dad, it is okay to admit that you really don't have the answers. Mm-hmm. You really don't know, and you have no reason why you don't know. I said, Dad, in order for me, and I didn't get this information until I realized, man, I don't know jack shit about politics. Mm-hmm. I don't know nothing, but it's okay, Dad. It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he got so quiet because at the end of the day, it's that pride, it's that ego, it's that I don't want to look wrong. I don't want.
And he's a pastor. Like, he's supposed to be the man of influence. Yeah.
Exactly. And he kept saying, if God wants me to know something, he'll reveal it. He'll reveal it to me. And I'm like, Dad, every one of your family members is saying something. I think God's been trying to reveal it to you. That's God trying to reveal it to you. And he just sat there.
Oh, that's like a slap in the face.
You know what I'm saying? And yeah. I was like, Dad, and it's not just, and here's how you could be sure that God's revealing it to you. The people that you're around every day, I've been saying it, but the one person who you don't get to see that much and talk to that much, the next time you see him, he's saying the exact same thing and hasn't said one word to those people, haven't talked to anyone else about it, but I'm saying the same thing. I think God
that's your sign. You that is the sign. That is the sign.
And he got quiet. And my mom said to me, when you said that to him,
that
like
is
everyone got quiet. Everyone got quiet. And my mom was like, You got him.
Yeah. Wow. And you were kind about it. You know, you were kind and you gave him a safe space. And that's so important. That's so important, especially with people's ego. Absolutely. I agree. You gave him a
safe space. And I had to check my family members because then I asked him, I was like, why is it so hard for you to believe it? He goes, well, just the way they be talking to me about it, like it had nothing to do with the actual information, but how they were presenting it,
delivering
it. And I said to him, I said, Dad, maybe they are wrong for how they're delivering it. And I turned to him, I said, maybe you guys are being a little too aggressive, and that's
because
wrong.
It's still a battle of winning, and people then want to say, "See, I told you so," and they want to rub it in their faces, and that's why I'm saying, you know, for anyone that's listening, if you feel that way, like I don't want to. It's not a matter of me saying, nah, I told you so. I just want to hug you and say, hey, it's okay. Let's battle. Right. Let's just welcome. Like, it's all right. You know what I mean? Right. It's not like that. Even when I went to my dad and say, hey, Dad, you were right about Obama. I feel disgusted that I even voted for this man. Like, I found this video of Obama in Flint, Michigan. I don't know if you saw this video. He was, okay, let me, very quick. This man was in Flint, Michigan. And you know about the water situation in Flint, Michigan, right? The water is tainted, the tap water. This was like a couple of years ago. So he's in Flint, Michigan. There's a room full of people, predominantly African-American, Black people. And so he's there and he's like, you know, we're all in this together, blah, 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 blah. We're here to help you, blah, 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 blah. And then he goes, wait a minute. I need some water. I'm thirsty. This is not a stunt, I promise. And so he's like, no, I want tap water. Give me a glass of water, something like that. And so people are like, wait a minute, you should want bottled water. Like, the tap water in Flint, Michigan is contaminated. So a person comes over, brings him a glass of water. So the audience is like, and he drinks the water. So everybody's like, oh, and he's like, it's fine. I'm sure I took a little bit of lead off of a wall and ate it as a child. I was like, wait, what? Did President Obama just say that he ate lead paint off of a wall and he's telling the audience that the water is fine when the water is clearly bad in Flint, Michigan? The entire audience gasped and was just like, I can't believe this is our president. And so later on, there's like another round table and he does the same thing. He goes, excuse me, I need some water. It's not a stunt, I promise. And does the same thing. So it was like this staged like thing that he does with the water. And I was just like, this is disgusting. Like, how is he an actor? Like, this is our president. Like, this was our president. Anyway, so this video, and I'm just like, you know, talking to my dad, and my dad never once said, Tamisha, I told you so, or you were stupid. Can't believe you voted for him. Like, he never put me down. He never made me feel like crap about it. All he said was, I understand. You know, you didn't know. People make mistakes. It's okay. At least you did your research. Maybe other people will. You got to give people space. People grow.
You got to.
And I'm just like, wow, that's amazing. And so I feel like the way you did that for your dad, you allowed him to just process that and grow. And you were able to potentially have an impact on him. And I think that's such a beautiful thing. And the irony of it is that is probably what's going to make him wake up and elevate versus just screaming at him. And that's the thing, you know, ultimately, trying to change someone's mind or trying to push information onto people is not going to do anything but push people further away. If you just share, if people are then inclined to want to research further or ask questions, great. If not, that's okay too. And that's something I had to learn the hard way as well, because I definitely used to be the person that's like, push, 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 and you're only pushing people further away. And the last thing I want to say when it comes to politics, because I know you mentioned and a lot of people mentioned that, you know, it's not Trump that I like and his personality and blah, 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 blah. Consider this. This is the last thing I'll say. One of the people, one of the journalists that asked this question to Trump, I think it was last week, like Wednesday, Thursday, they literally flat out asked this man if he was taking down a satanic ring of pedophiles. And this man did not even break, okay? He has never worn his emotions on his sleeve. He has never like broken, I guess you could say, character. He has never succumbed emotionally, nothing. So for a moment, I just want you to realize that President Trump, okay, who has never taken $1 for this position, which I think being the president pays $400,000 a year, okay? Mm-hmm. So he has not taken 1 cent of a salary since he has taken office. So he has actually lost money. He could be retired, playing golf, living his best life. He hasn't done that, okay? So I'm not trying to paint him as his hero martyr, but I'm just saying he is taking the, you know, his retirement years to be the president of our country, which honestly, I'm surprised he hasn't been assassinated at this point, hasn't taken a dime for this role, and is trying to do something which I think is pretty darn impressive, and has not lost character or broken down with the questions they have thrown at him. So like him or not, I think he is playing the role the best he can and keeping what I would call a poker face the best that he can. So you have to kind of look at it that way, that you have to be strategic and you can't show all your cards and you can't show your emotions and just kind of play into the hands of the media. And so if you look at the way the mainstream media has been painting him, you know, and the picture that they have been painting him and trying to like make him into this monster, if you kind of take a step back and look at it from that angle, it makes sense why he's doing the things that he's doing and saying the things and behaving the way he's behaving. If you look at his track record and some of the things he has accomplished in the past and the deals that he's been able to close, like, he is a very smart businessman. He has made a lot of money. Like, if you actually look at that, he's made a lot of money. He's been mentioned, I think, in like 20 or 30 hip hop songs over the past 20, 30 years. He is highly respected, or was highly respected, in the hip hop community and culture. So to even paint him as a racist makes absolutely no sense. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So if you just look at that from a business, real estate, money-making point of view, what he's doing, it makes a lot of sense. So I understand that he's not a likable person now, but previous to him stepping into office, he was actually
very likable,
very well-respected person in the community, and treated and still treats, from what I hear, his staff and employers very well. I remember I worked at a place back in New York City. This was in 2008. I worked with a girl. She worked for President Trump at the Trump Tower. And she had nothing but amazing things to say about him. She said he was the best employer she's ever worked for. She said she knew her by name, always said good morning. Like, he was just super polite and just an incredible boss. And so I've always had a lot of respect for him. And it's just interesting to see how his name has been drawn through the mud. And it's interesting now that I reflect back on myself, how I was able to be manipulated for about 4 years because I was watching mainstream media. And I can see how I got caught up in that. And I had negative thoughts when I had no reason to, and I couldn't even articulate why. And I remember when my dad would ask me, Tamisha, remove your emotions. Give me your argument as to why you don't like him. And I remember I couldn't give him any. I couldn't. And that was literally when I realized I have no argument. And I went to school for criminal justice and law. And so I pride myself in being able to articulate an argument. And I was like, I don't have one. I don't have one. I was like, oh my God, I don't have one. I was like, damn, I fell for it. I totally fell for it, you know? So just something I wanted to kind of put out there. So for people that are listening to this, if you're totally on the anti-Trump train, you hate Trump, maybe these words resonated. Ask yourself that question. Take away your emotion for a moment and give me your argument as to why you actually don't like this man.
And I guarantee you no one has an argument. Guarantee you no one has not. The exact same thing I said to my dad. And he, well, you ain't got nothing to say.
Yeah. So another thing I want to ask you before we close out is a question that I asked, and I thought your answer was very interesting. So I would love to ask you, and it may get you a little vulnerable, but I always ask guests what they do for self-care. And so you answered the question by saying loving others. And so first off, I think that's very admirable, because I think loving others is very important. And I think loving others is something not everybody can do, right? Because in order to really truly love others, you have to love yourself first, right? You can't love other people if you don't love yourself. So with that being said, though, self-care is about self, right? So what do you really do to love you? And what do you do to take care of you? Do you have anything that you do to kind of maintain yourself spiritually? Like, I know you don't necessarily practice meditation, but do you, I don't know, take longer showers, or do you go for walks? Like, I don't know, like something that you do to maintain your mental health?
Honestly, as I've gotten older, I disagree with the statement, you can't love others unless you love yourself. I think it's the other way around. You can't love yourself unless you love others.
Why is that?
Well, you know, with me and my spiritual journey, which I don't know if you saw, but I posted my last live on my page, and it was, I just got done dinner with my family, and we were walking downtown Naperville, and there was these young Black men on the corner preaching fire and brimstone, but they were like the Black Israelite kind. And like they were saying, these are the true Jews, and blah blah blah, and no one can get saved and unless you're one of these 12 tribes of Jews. And you know, we actually, me, my younger brother, my dad stopped and had a conversation with them, so I decided to get it on live.
Okay.
Now I agree with them as far as like who the real Jews are, who they say the Jews are of today. I don't believe they are the real Jews, and I feel like the Black people have been stripped of their birthright and understanding that we are the true Israelites and we are the true Jews. They've been stripped of that, and I agree with them up until that point. But with me being a Christian, I believe that God dying on the cross for us. We could talk the blood of genealogy, but the blood of Christ washes us all. So it doesn't really matter who's a true Jew or who's not a true Jew. If you're a follower of Christ, you're one of his children. And my brother asked the guy this question. He goes, do you know God? And the guy, instantly out of emotion, responded and said, yes, I know his word. My brother goes, I didn't ask you that. He goes, do you know God? You can know someone's words, but not know them. Oh, I know God. He goes, okay, so what is God? God is the scriptures. That's not God. I know Joe Biden's words, but I don't know Joe Biden. I know Trump's words, but I don't know Trump. I know your word. Other people that we can know their words, but not know them. God is love. God, his love is something that has been shown to us time and time again. And his love is always a love that is not putting himself first, but putting others first. So when I say that I believe that you can't love yourself until you love others. And what I do for my self-care, I try to always be someone who can be the person that stands in the gap for them. Everyone that knows me knows that if you need something and I have the ability to get it for you, I will do it. And if I can't, I'll find a way. I'm one of the most connected people in the city when it comes to, especially when it comes for artists. When you need a studio, I got you. You need a videographer, I got you. You need this, you need that, and that, I got you. And I'm the type of person, and Evan as well too, we will stretch ourselves thin for people. And that ultimately is very fulfilling for me. You know, that is my self-care. You know, I could take a longer walk for myself, or I could take a longer shower for myself. But at the end of the day, like, that's cool and that's nice. That's nice. But I feel the greatest when I know that I put someone else above me.
So let me ask you this. Who's got you?
Who's got me? The same people. Well, God got me. And I got me. But the people that experienced the love that I've given them, they got me. Now, does everyone think the same way? No. But, you know, the people that love me, that I've shown love to, and that they reciprocate their love, I know they got me. But at the end of the day, I don't need no one else to get me besides God. That's it. And if everyone was to turn their back on me today, I still show those same people the same amount of love and be okay. Because at the end of the night, everyone has to do the same thing. Lay their head on that pillow and relive the day in their mind and be accountable for their actions. And as long as my actions are lining up with what God says and the fact that I put others before me, whether or not they did the same thing, I know I'm good. So self-care for me is just taking care of the people that I love, from my kids to their mothers to my friends and family. That's it. I'm the type of person, I don't really need much. You know, I got my music, do that, you know what I'm saying? But even especially, which is so crazy we're having this conversation, which I can tell you more off the air, but this whole weekend has been a whole eye-opener experience for me. Spent the whole weekend with my family, and I'm about to go to the studio now. And I actually, last night, was talking to my daughter's mom, and I was like, I think I want to give up music.
What?
Yeah.
What?
I think I want to stop making music. And she goes, she made a statement, she goes, well, what if you just switched up your subject matter? And that was an eye opener. Because yeah. I feel like I've been playing this fence of this party boy, which I am very much a party boy. Mm-hmm. But as I'm starting to realize I'm getting older, I'm changing. Mm-hmm. And the party isn't seeming, you know, doing cocaine isn't seeming as appealing to me anymore.
Right. What if you shared the message of everything we just talked about through your music? Because something I just was thinking about is that I really love your music. I have a whole playlist of just your songs. Like, there's so many songs that you have that I just love. And like, you know, I don't kiss people's asses. Like, I don't. And I'm a very blunt person. And you know, you're the last person I'm going to do that to. I'm just being really honest. And Evan knows this. But you have so many songs that are just so damn good. And like, there's so many artists that I had to just like delete. You're a pedophile. Nope. You know what I mean? So I feel like there's like not enough artists out there that have good music that I can't listen to in good conscience. So it's like, okay, at least I can support Austin. Dope. So I'm just like, wait, you can't stop making music. You can't. No. So what if you just make music that is just showing your evolution? So maybe you're not talking about, you know, the things, the partying, but you're talking about what we just talked about on this podcast.
And, you know, God has a way of revealing things to you. Last night, this conversation, and I'm about to be in the studio in less than an hour. So
please, I think that would be
that's the vibe.
And such a great way to continue to spread the message through music, because, you know, something I was talking about yesterday, because it's funny that you talk about confidence and doing different things, because that's literally what I'm doing right now is exploring different things besides music. And so I'm working on a manifestation guide, and something that really like hit me is that when you manifest things, it doesn't matter what you're saying. It's all about your energy, right? The universe, God, consciousness doesn't understand English. It understands energy. So the moment you match the frequency is when you start attracting things, right? And so what really hit me is that the reason people resonate with your music is not even necessarily always your lyrics, because there could be songs out there that you don't even understand the language, but you vibe with the words because of the frequency, the energy, right? So I feel like if you can make music that is true to whatever you're going through, it's gonna hit and resonate with people. So maybe that's the next step, because it seems like you're a natural entertainer. I don't know what else you could be doing unless you're going to make the transition to acting or something else. So what else is coming up for you? Let's talk about that before we wrap up.
Oh, man. I just dropped a project called They Don't Get It. It's probably one of the realest projects I ever wrote. Three songs on that project. Go check it out. It's on all streaming platforms. The past month, I have been just locking myself in the studio. If you follow me on Instagram, which you guys should, you'll see that I'm constantly in the studio, constantly making songs. And so right now, me and Evan reconvened, working on some business things. And in the process, I am just creating new music. So I just finished up three projects. So I literally and I am simultaneously right now finishing up three projects with three different producers. One has five tracks, one has seven tracks, and the other one has nine tracks. So yeah, man. Oh yeah. And in the process of that, I'm still recording a bunch of other stuff. So all those projects should be done, mixed and mastered by the end of September. And then we are going to figure out whether if we're going to release all three projects before the end of the year, which I'm kind of a fan of. But yeah, you're going to be seeing a plethora of music just falling out of the sky for me. And yeah, man, I think the subject matter is about to change. As far as that, you know, my bread and butter is definitely the shows. So with this COVID and everything that's going on, that aspect of my life has taken a big hit. But this other side of my life is growing. So that, and once the shows get back going on, y'all ain't ready. Because in all this music that I've been dropping, it's gonna be hard to have one show. I might have to have like three shows, three different days to be able to do all the music. But I'm in the works currently right now. I might be performing at the House of Blues in February if everything works out, COVID stuff wise. And if that goes through, that show's about to be insane. I'm gonna need at least a 2-hour set.
Nice. So, awesome.
Yeah, man. So just follow me on Instagram, link up with my Spotify if you use Spotify, Apple Music if you use Apple Music. And
good
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, guys. Stay abreast, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So before we wrap up, last thing I'm going to ask you, every guest closes out the show with this, and that is any words of wisdom you want to leave our listeners with?
Any words of wisdom? Stay in school. No, I'm just playing. keep your heart open. Keep your mind open. Use your gut. Not everything is what it seems. And always do your research. Everything that anyone tells you, research it. Even everything that we talked about today, research it. Yeah, man. I love you guys.
Awesome. Austin Fillmore, absolute pleasure. Grateful for you. And thank you. I appreciate you.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening. To stay in touch, please subscribe to my newsletter over at vibequeenmusic.com to stay up to date with my music and guided meditation, this podcast, and to get your free manifestation guide. Till next time, and remember, self-awareness is the gateway to inner peace.